Bonjour.
Lou.
Hello.
Oh.
Well, this is stressful.
Things got bad, and this isn't a place where good things happened. So
there are so few good things are happening in this location, truly.
Very few. It's pretty bad all around. We shouldn't have ever been here. But
hey, we got good things out of it, though, right? So
yes,
you know, in that kind of way,
we will have learned.
Mm-hmm. So, post stinky sandwich of cheese.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is this a fully running down the street with it in your mouth like you are late for the first day of school?
Yes,
in an anime?
Absolutely. Ormar's body's got a knife and we can't waste any time.
Yeah. So, this is the question. It's like, you know that Orimar's body is currently being held by a luminary. A luminary is acting through it. There is a tenuous deal in place. The luminary has promised, what was it, to basically leave most of the town alone? I forget what Orimar specifically bargained for.
Yeah, Orimar was kind of like, hey, I want to use your power to commit a spectacle of violence against the most hated person in Sorrow's End. And the butcher was like, bet, but what if I did it and not you? I think was the kind of arrangement therein. Although, to be honest, whether he holds up his end of the deal, now he has control over my body, I don't really have much room to argue.
Orimar, I mean, like, the thing is, deals with luminaries are pretty binding on their part. Like, I don't think you would be able to recall an example of somebody actually having a luminary completely pull out of a deal. There are definitely people who have made deals like, well, I'm not satisfied with the results of this because I thought they would be different, which is different than this luminary completely just did not stand by their word. So there's some kind of like cosmic thing within that bargain of, you know, your body is supposed to be taken from you only temporary to commit this one little murder. And in return for that happening, you will receive what you request. The tricky thing here is you are either going to stop things from happening or not. So I guess my question is, like, are you going to attempt to not kill Truss through the butcher killing Truss? Or are you going to, are you basically going to interrupt things before they happen? Or are you going to deal immediately with the fallout of things to try and, you know, retain a modicum of, security of not giving away the fact that you're here?
Yeah, I think as far as Orimar is concerned, that murder needs to happen one way or another. He's mad about it being done outside of his control for reasons obvious, but also I think he wants to get involved to prevent collateral. So gotcha. To not prevent Liz Truss from dying, heavens forbid.
May she be blessed.
Not to prevent Edith Truss from dying.
Skulls for the skull throne, blood for the blood god.
God. But if there's any, you know, like if there's like clerks or whatever in the way and the butcher is like, well, I could just cleave you in two to get to her. Trying stopping those murders.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is the energy of this is more you want to chaperone a murder. Or at least Orimar wants to chaperone a murder.
Yeah. Babysit a murder.
I don't think Gable knows that.
There hasn't been much time to explain.
No, I think it's just like, oh, somebody's got your body. We need to go fix that. I would say we could search, but we kind of know where Ormar is going to be, right?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, the vibes, the absolutely rancid vibes that the Butcher radiates is probably to some degree spiritually trackable. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to roll for it if that would be required to kind of get a bead on the general distance and location.
I think, you know, your two options are you can either try to find Orimar or try to find Truss. And like, if your plan was, oh yeah, we got to stop this from happening because, you know, we think it's going to be a security risk or whatever. It's bad for OPSEC to do this murder so openly. Then you would want to be looking for Orimar first, Orimar's body, and the Butcher. But if that's not the concern, if you're just like, yeah, we want to make sure that there's no collateral damage and whatever, you can probably go to Truss, who will probably be easier to find, and just do a stakeout.
Okay. Sorry to table talk. My concern, I guess, would be if we're not tracking the Butcher, he could do whatever he wants before he gets to Edith. So I think finding him first and then
sense to me.
Parlaying there, I think, is probably makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, we don't know if he'll be killing all the wait staff at a restaurant on his way to the dining room.
This steak is raw!
Yeah.
Well, I'm on the way. I might as well stop in at this taco shop and kill everyone inside.
No.
Just because it's on the way. I'm
Butcher?
Feeling hungry!
No! You got to be focused on the task at hand, Butcher.
Hungry for violence. Yeah. No, let's see if we can put our feelers out and get the general direction of where possessed Orimar is.
All right, Gable, I think you're pretty well equipped to sniff out killing intent like a bloodhound.
Okay. Don't say it like that.
Well, you've done it many times before.
What skill would that be, do you think? Prowess?
No, I think that would be through magic. I think you'd make a magic roll. I mean, it's either that or intellect, you know?
But your magic's
because you're not going to be so physically strong that you know when people are going to murder each other. That's we can agree that's nothing, right?
Because your magic's sitting at like what, 48?
Yeah, it's a lot. I'm wary of doing more magic because the more magic I do, the more sniffy Mr. Morningstar gets.
Ah, right. A mechanic I was not privy to. Apologies.
Oh well, it's you're not privy to it because it doesn't technically exist. But I guess I haven't decided against it either.
Oh, then I assumed that you would be mad at me as James D'Amato whenever I use magic because you did that to me in the last arc.
In the last arc, what happened was the ritual that they were going through, that it was mostly Cerise was like calling lightning because they had like put angel feathers in jars, like separated it from their body to make this happen. So it was extremely obvious when that was happening. And it's not like the Morningstar isn't looking, but like there's a reason that you were wandering around for 200 years without.
There's lots of fallout. All right, so then this is fine. So James, forget I said anything. I will.
I think it's too late for that.
I will roll my magic though. 1, 2, 3, 4. All right. Roll the dice. 5 successes.
Oh,
one opportunity. And one transform.
Damn. Okay. Make sure you're marking on your sheet the regression and transform results that you've gotten for those relationship dice so far with Orimar, even if you have to create a new little window for it.
Because we've had one decay, one entangle, and this is one transform.
Yeah, entangle is an interesting one. Like, I don't know that I'm hanging on to that result right now, but entangle is supposed to, like, cause a thing to happen that somehow underscores the nature of the relationship right now, mm-hmm. that like sort of mm-hmm. encapsulates where it's at. So I guess a good question, especially because we are getting a regress and whatnot, what is that relationship? How would you two define that relationship as it is?
I mean, Gable has to be kind of cagey with who they are for a lot of reasons, a lot of the time. And this is maybe the first time we have very much been in a position to very directly understand each other. Mm-hmm. If you want something spicier than that, there was a point where you were going through your rock collection, and one of them was, I do believe, I want to say either Firmament or like a Sovereign piece or something similar. Jonnet managed to get hold of that, and then Oromar was like, I'm just gonna hold on to that and keep that for safekeeping. So I have that currently.
Why?
Not on my person for obvious reasons, but
why did Jonnet take that?
I think they were concerned for you. But
Jonnet took my rock?
Well, I mean, I think Travis Matigo took your rock and was kind of pushed the idea onto Jonnet.
Pretty rude.
Let's not get in the weeds. Who is that?
Rock.
I don't know a Travis Matigo.
Yeah.
So you might know that now okay. that we are brain blended.
I forgot about that entirely. And now I think Gable's just kind of miffed, like, took my rock. Probably touched all of my rocks.
It seemed dangerous to
I'll have to clean them.
I have to clean my rocks.
I can return it.
I don't even fully remember like why Travis took my firmament, but I don't know.
I mean, you were in the middle of a, I believe, depressive episode. I think it's his method of self care.
I feel like the rock wasn't the reason for the depressive episode, but hey, I appreciate the sentiment. I would love my rock back.
Noted. When we return from this, maybe not fully drenched in blood, we can see about getting you your rock back.
I think Gable's relationship to the captain is very much like the head coach and the special teams coach. Like, I'm the special teams coach. Like, I have a very specialized knowledge that the head coach may not have. And so I'm an important part of the team, but also I'm not nearly an authority figure to anyone.
Liz, I just want to take a moment to thank you so much for taking the complicated relationship in this role-playing game and putting it in terms that I can understand.
Yes, absolutely.
as I think I get, is football. I think that's football stuff.
Special teams are across many different sports.
God damn it. Really? Jesus Christ. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad. Well, it's a sports metaphor. So me and the rest of our audience that listens to Actual Play podcasts are finally on board because...
Oh, the jock listeners are eating good today.
Oh, yeah.
Right. All right, nerds. Good talk about sports metaphors. But, like, that's sort of the relationship. Like, we are valuable to each other, but we don't occupy the same level of authority or knowledge at all.
Yeah. Oh, so I think that is probably the entanglement, and that is like the diminish that we have seen thus far is that this situation is putting you physically and spiritually in the same space. Like, as disorienting as it is, Oromar's soul being inside you means he's using your mind to think and helping you think right now in a way that is drawing you to both to like a closer level of understanding of each other than maybe you've ever had. So it's not that that relationship has changed formally. It is that some things have happened that have like really brought the dynamics within that relationship to the fore. And that change could happen if things continue in this way. What were your results again?
It was 5 successes, 1 opportunity, 1 transform.
All right. Looks like you get overall 4 successes. There's one complication. And yeah, so be sure to mark off that transform. You are able to find the butcher pretty quickly. We've established in the past that, like, killing intent is something that specifically Gable is honed to find and track. That is how Gable saved Hildred all those months ago. That is exactly how Gable tracks the butcher now. And the butcher is killing intent, given form. As the butcher strides through this community, it leaves a thick miasma behind it. And finding and following that trail is not that hard. I think first there is, like, it heads towards the factory before anything else. Like, basically insinuates itself inside the factory.
Ugh. How are we gonna get in there?
I do believe the answer is going to be with force. Yes, I'm not happy about it either. It makes the sabotage we spent a long amount of time in the meetings and blackboard chalk arranging entirely meaningless now, which is very frustrating.
Could I
had an excellent presentation prepared for it and everything. Oh, I put in a lot of work.
You're so good at PowerPoint. You're very good at it.
I was about to say PowerPoint, but that doesn't exist. I'm just going to say presentation. But yes.
It is PowerPoint. We have it. We have one of those programs.
Yeah, it might not be a computer program like it is in our world. It's a technique of presentation. You PowerPoint. You still require slides. You still require, like, different visual stimuli that you point at. But
Do you think that if I stood out here in an alley and then just thought very murderous thoughts, the butcher would just come out?
Maybe. Although, he's like, maybe. And two thoughts flow through his mind, and I guess simultaneously through yours. One, the deal struck was that he would be trying to attack the most hated person in Sorrow's End. Uh-huh. And second, if it's about ominous amounts of killing intent in a huge flash, didn't our man Arivedi?
There's not going to be a lot of ways for us to.
I don't think we can outstrip that amount of rage.
Yeah, basically, what you are proposing in a way is kind of a prayer to the butcher to get a meeting. I think that is possible. That is a thing that is possible for you to do. I think it would be really interesting to see what Gable and Orimar together would do to try and manifest enough killing intent to be a prayer for the butcher to appear. But, you know, it's not necessarily something you have to do.
I, out of an abundance of caution and also an intent to keep things moving along, I don't think we've got time to do any prayers. I think we just got to get in there.
All right, let's move.
All right, are you doing this subtly or are you doing this in the open? And this will be, and I think I've said this before, but this is for real the last time that I will remind anybody of this. If you are discovered here, there will be consequences down the road. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that I don't think all of the things that are happening in motion right now will necessarily lead to your discovery. But if there is a chance inside those little PC brains of yours rattling around that there's the idea that it is inevitable that we will be discovered, therefore it doesn't matter what we do, I would love to disabuse you of that notion.
this is an important moment, so I'll talk through my feelings on this. Ultimately, like Oromar is doing a very violent, potentially horrible thing for kind of a greater good of trying to free the people who live here, which I guess would necessitate kind of explaining who we are, because people would be like, you just rolled in and killed 1 to 2 of the most important people in this place. Why did you do that? You're just a rando who drifted in on a jaunt. And so, like, a degree of explanation for the buy-in would kind of be necessary for them to even believe what's going on here. Because the idea of just causing a power vacuum and then leaving doesn't feel like a way to liberate anyone.
I think you're correct. I do think there needs to be a larger plan at place. I will, again, the last time I say anything, because I want to be your impartial GM that just allows you to make decisions and revels in whatever comes the fallout of that. I think there are ways to do that without coming out and saying that you are the Uhuru to random civilians.
I mean, that's the Johnny O'Mara staple, just saying the thing to people.
Yeah. You could tell them that you're Lena Gilo from the Minok. That is not off the table.
I suppose if it's kind of, you know, making the big plays now and then having to kind of do the explanations later, going full angel mode or whatever would probably give the game away and would definitely make the information you sold less valuable.
Or perhaps more.
I mean, here's my plan, and it's going to be stupid, but I think it might work. We have not had contact with Jonna in a while. There is enough of a story that we have crafted that me, Jonna's butler, is so panicked and
trying to find him
berserk that I'm going to run through every building in this town, Sorrow's End, screaming and looking anywhere I can find anywhere I can, including this building.
He was screaming for Tiago Lancaster.
Please, Tiago, please. Oh, God.
I love this. This is a great plan. In my opinion, this is a great plan. Whether or not it works is a question to the dice, but I think this is a great plan.
No, I'm down for that. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will take advantage of my relationship with Jonnet to have some real panic about it. And
Ooh, that's interesting. I'm trying to think if you'd be able to leverage your relationship with Jonnet in this circumstance. I don't think so. If the personas that you were playing were legitimate, like then it would work. But no.
So now it's just my acting skill.
It's just your acting talents.
That could be presence. My presence.
That's definitely presence.
It's not great. But I do have, as long as I have one bar in presence, people will assume you and anyone you are with are formidable.
Okay. Yeah. So it's basically part of what this is. I think this is going to add a volatility die to this, where people are like, well, that person is clearly panicked and very big. I don't want to mess with them necessarily. Even if I have to get them out of this factory, I don't want to mess with them.
Is it volatility major or minor?
It's going to be a minor volatility.
Okay. So I've got 2d8 in presence, and that adds another d6. Let's try it.
Let's try it.
Let's roll it. And am I still working on with a plus for my relationship with Oromar, or probably not, right?
Yeah, I don't think you're leveraging your relationship with Oromar in this situation.
Let's see. Oh, lovely. That's one success and opportunity for me.
Okay. I got a failure and a complication, which brings us to a wash. So we will be drawing a luminary for this. Oh, that's not good.
Oh, man. Okay.
That's the island.
Oh. Okay. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, that's imprisonment, doom, the hateful sea.
Oh no.
So there are a lot of ways to thematically play with this. I guess it wasn't a hard failure and this isn't a disaster. So what I think is probably better, rather than to say you are like arrested or whatever, I think you barge into the factory. Look, you're looking for Orimar, but you are claiming that you are looking for Jonnet, and people try to get in your way to stop you. You can see that there's a lot of hesitation because you are a big, panicked person.
Please, I know this is the most, this is so dangerous, and if he's here, he needs to get out right away. Please, can you please move? I will find him. I will find him so quickly. Please move.
Yeah, and like people are hesitant to get in your way because they have very sensitive skin. They don't want to even be accidentally knocked down by you. So it's this tension, and I think people end up having to... Oh, you know what it is? You barge into some storage rooms again. You're doing this like you're acting as best you can. And I don't think it's a thing where you're unbelievable. I think it is a thing where even if people believe you, they can't just let you be in the factory like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Something has to be done. You're going through these storage rooms. I think you knock over a barrel of the poison that is like
this Maledicio. Runoff. Mm.
Yeah. Maledicio gets knocked all over the floor, and that they have to pull a bell. And this bell rings out and is basically a general evacuation of the factory.
Oh, mm-hmm. Oopsie.
Hey heroes, it's James, your Game Master, and welcome to the Midroll. I hope all my US listeners out there are enjoying American Canada Day. There might not be anything worth celebrating, but at least we don't have to work. As always, a huge thank you to our backers on Patreon. We have some exciting things coming. I know I feel like I say that every time, but we really do have some exciting things coming. Drew and I just recorded something great. It is probably going to go on the end of episodes, but I might also release it as a whole in Patreon as well. You can find that and more over at patreon.com/oneshotpodcast. Now, a quick word from our sponsor. And with all that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. We're back on the Uhuru. We kind of know the situation. Right now, as far as Jonnet's stats, I'm going to leave them where they are in this session, because I know there have been a lot of spends that have been made thus far.
Yeah.
We're going to leave them where they are. We'll talk about refreshing when we come together for the next session. But for now, everybody is still here. We're in the aviary, and everybody is like very seriously considering what the next move is and kind of looking to Jonnet at this moment. Jonnet called this meeting. Jonnet knows all of these things, has more firsthand information than everybody else here. Everybody's like delivered their opinions. I think Wendell is like a little bit checked out on this, usually being the most action-oriented, bloodthirsty one. Spit appears to be like fully in. This is what the Uhuru does. We need to figure out how we are going to intervene, not if we intervene. Mm. Jane is in the position of, I would like to intervene, but I need to make sure that it doesn't put too many people on the crew at overmuch risk, and it's something that we need to put to a vote, whatever we're doing. Nodos is like, if there is a clear strategy that we are intervening with, I can support that. And Bathroom Barry, I think, has been the most enigmatic because that is the character that Tyler plays. So he hasn't spoken up much, but should be there.
Yeah.
great. There's like a moment where it's like, kind of like, we don't want to announce ourselves. We need to try and stay undercover for as long as we can. We need to try and get to the masquerade. That is our end goal right now. But then I think in a moment, it's like, wait, we and John, it like gestures to the larger group and then the larger room. We don't need to do this. We don't need to be the ones that infiltrate to get to the Grisova. Because we've got backup.
What do you mean? Literally, Bayless turns around and looks behind him.
The bird looks at Bayless.
We've got 99 favors?
I think so.
99 underutilized. God, we could have gotten hot meals ready made for us.
DoorDashed to us from the Tempest Armada.
Okay, you are definitely not using this right, but okay, I'm really good at shrimp.
That's
right, the Bubba Gump. The Bubba Gump.
The Bubba Gump. The Bubba
famous
Gump.
Famous Tempest Armada ship.
I'm just saying, the shrimp here is excellent, and I hope you enjoy.
But I am very much overqualified for what your employing me is right now.
We usually go around the coast doing different things, but if you want us to bring you shrimp at any particular time, and of course the shrimp are like monster shrimp.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
God, yeah.
Cursed shrimp.
cursed shrimp.
This we gotta cook the curse out of that shrimp.
This is a fascinating boat. I want to talk about it later.
We got a spinoff. So then John is like, but if we've got the heart of the Bandit Queen.
What is, whoa. Bayless like raises their hand. What is
getting to it?
Okay, thank you.
We are through general sky piratry, we are owed favors. And those favors can take the form of a lot of different things, including ship and men, ship and crew. So what if, and then John is like, wait, how fast does it take the Tempest Armada to like swoop in? Because if we can get a couple people to back us up and maybe get themselves to the Grisova or me to the Grisova, we can sabotage the Grisova and be out, and no one would know that it was the Uhuru because the Uhuru wouldn't be the ones doing it.
That probably depends on who is operating within the area, but if anyone's even close, we could start performing an operation now and simply ask them to take credit for it.
Yeah, we pass it to the Tempest, and then we keep on sailing.
Okay, well, if we're going to move forward with that, then probably the operation here looks a little bit different. If we've got other ships involved, we do want whatever civilians are trapped here to leave here. And I think it's more of a siege. We're taking this area apart, mainly because if we call in Tempest Armada, you know, I think the crew is going to go for it if we leave with a bunch of red feather. If we leave with a bunch of red feather lucre, I don't know if they have any cash here, but any resources, ships, like dyes, whatever, that should all leave in our cargoes. We take that out. That will probably actually help the civilians on their way, too. We can leave everybody with a little bit of cash because whatever we're taking in resources will vastly outstrip that.
Jonnet is kind of like eyes up, at least, just kind of like trying to game this out. If that's the case, then is it one favor per ship? Or is it like one favor gets you as many people as you need the favor for? Because if we can get a couple ships here, that means that we can get folks, we can get crew in here to sabotage the Grisova. We could also get a ship or two here to take civilians in.
Well, it's been a while since we've been part of the Tempest Armada. I don't know if they've changed policy, but this is a sort of operation, Jonnet. This is a fairly large red feather operation. I think that we can call in the favors and worry
20
about...
20 ships. 30 ships? Bayless is like saying there's like 20, 30 ships? That sound good?
Son, we'd probably be good with one or two. You
so
know,
five?
On the Uhuru, we have at least crew members, we should probably be more than enough to perform whatever operation we're talking about. Really, it's namesake and cargo space that we're buying with these favors. So we can call them in and worry about how much it is later, because we'll be profiting off of this endeavor no matter what.
So like three ships, we're talking like two to come in and blast.
Finger guns.
Finger guns. And the other one to like take everybody away.
Probably the
yeah.
That's probably, we probably don't need, I mean, and he's looking to spit for this. We probably don't need, the pew pews could also be folks that take folks away, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, it largely, John, it depends on, what you and your friend are able to accomplish next. I say you take a contingent of crew, go to one of these remote Grosova gardens or what have you, and see what you can do to dismantle it. If you think you can take it down, then you take it down. And the question as to what we do with the town, well, that depends on what we can communicate. Because for a while, at least, the Red Feathers are going to be putting, you know, indebted bodies between us and taking over this place. So if you can convince those people that standing on the wrong side.
Absolutely, I can convince them. They all know me. I'm Bayless. Everyone loves me. There's just silence. There's silence in the air room.
We go. We have a plan. Jonnet, I'd say we'll get word to the captain about making a move on those favors. As soon as the captain calls in the favor, I'm going to take that back. What you got to do, you got to take out one of these Grosova gardens. We got to know how to do it first, especially if we're calling in help to get us done. If it turns out to be the sort of thing where you personally have to do it, then we might have to skirmish a little bit before we finish the job. But you pick a crew or pick a contingent of crew to bring with you.
Achoo!
Goodness me!
A lot of hay in the air.
Yeah. Well, it's the feathers. It's the feathers. This room.
Canonically,
is...
spit is allergic to the birds. We have just.
Yeah.
Took 6 years to figure it out.
The captain fought so hard for those damn birds, I couldn't say no to him. So, yeah, Johnny, you pick out a contingent of crew. You bring them with you to take out one of these gardens. As soon as we know the method, then we'll decide what the next move is. Just make sure that nobody escapes.
Yeah.
James, can I ask you a question about Sorrow's End in general? What is this defensive capabilities? Like, are there warships protecting the place? So are there batteries? Like, what's going on?
We do know that there are ships. Any Red Feather ship in the area is armed with cannon.
Obviously.
There are at least, I think, two ships in the port. There is whatever ship the reference desk employee came in on that was from the nearby city. And there is probably a personal yacht. I would say personal yacht probably doesn't have more than 30 or 40 cannons. It's close to...
And is it ship-to-ship cannon or mariner cannon?
I think it would be a mixture of both.
Mixture of both.
Because, you know, ship to ship, you can also be higher than another ship and fire down as well. The other ship being a standard transport barge in a region without an escort, I would assume it is closer to 60 cannon. But that's like 60 total, so 30 on either side.
Yeah.
Like, they are dangerous in that the Uhuru is not a cannon-armed ship. So we've got birds instead. So it is not a – like these – I don't think it's a given that in air-to-air combat the Uhuru would beat any of these ships, but it's also – a question of surprise and boarding, especially because these ships haven't taken off yet. Those ships are only dangerous if they are in the air and they have to get enough crew to get in the air. Like, they're not expecting an attack here. Like we said earlier, pirate activity across the board is at an all-time low. There have not been a lot of moves made by pirates. And this is also not an area frequented by pirates because the
only thing that's leaving here is these dyes. And usually those are packaged up on either red feather transport ships or privateer ships, which are a much more appealing target because they know their hulls are stuffed with cargo.
So there are no stationary batteries.
I can't guarantee that there are no stationary batteries because it's not something anybody has scouted for. But the likelihood that there are a lot is low.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. Most of the time, the Red Feather is kind of depending on we will have the ships and the majority of ships in any combat situation. So they're not like, unless it is a, you know, fortified Red Feather stronghold, they're not putting a bunch of batteries on ground.
This has been Red Feather Tactics. Thank you so much for listening. thanks, James.
And don't forget to buy Omega Brain, our supplement, to make you submissive and breedable.
When are we going to get a supplement sponsor?
We got to really get a supplement sponsor. Well, we got to decide what our tactic is.
I guess this is a question. Well, because Jonnet has the shift records for the building.
That's true.
And he's trying to get a sense of like where people are going and how big is like the indentured population of Sorrow's End in the event that we tried to like mass get folks out?
So you would know the exact like a number of the indentured population. Like it is somewhere between, I want to say, 600 and 800 people who are debtors here. And maybe the ratio is like 6 to 1. So like about 100, maybe even less, maybe like between 150 staff who is here on Red Feather salary.
Gotcha.
That's because this is a shoestring operation. They're trying to maximize profits. And the population here has not been one that has been like rowdy or out of control. They are on a technocratic work schedule, meaning that a good portion of the population at any given time is at sleep or at rest or at work.
Bayless, what would it take to get, if we do have a moment where we are getting people out of here, I feel like that puts folks that are on like, I don't know, third shift out because they're going to be either asleep or unresponsive. What would it take to get a message out to them being like, hey, next Friday, don't sleep. Be ready to like move.
That's easy enough. Like we talk to each other all the time and we have plenty of forms of our own communication. And I think we can get that out to just about everybody at any point. All they need to know is that there's hope. Because as long as they know that something's coming to help them, they'll be willing to do it.
Well, then we have another risk to evaluate. Perhaps we don't make an overt move now. Perhaps we dispatch Jonnet to one of these gardens. Jonnet does whatever it takes to take down that garden, and we merely silence the shifts. Or, as long as we silence one shift, get one shift of workers to agree that they won't talk about what transpired there. We sabotage it. That shift is the only one that knows there's a problem. The one that comes in afterwards just says things aren't working, and the Red Feathers have no idea why that's the case.
Yeah, dig that. Well, if that's the case, then Jonnet like looks around the room at various crew members like, if the goal is just to get in and see what the Grosova is and how to take it down, then I think it might just be you and me. And he looks at Bayless.
And Bayless goes, yeah, I'm here for it.
Well, that could be a risk. I'm only saying this so that you work exactly with the resources that you have. If you take members of the Uhuru crew, you could... And again, this is evaluating how loyal you think people would be. If you find the right shift, the right plant of people who would be willing to turn on the feathers.
That would be my shift.
Aren't you a factory? Yeah, I think you might be a factory worker. Oh, is he a factory worker? I can't remember what we established for him, so I don't want to.
No, that's so fun.
But right? If you bring crew, then you could show that you actually have the resources to pull off whatever you're trying to pull off. It might be easier to make people stand down. Again, a nightmare scenario is you show up and there's enough disagreement on the floor that one person tries to get away, because, Jonnet, if the secret that the Uhurus hear is at risk, then it might benefit the crew for you to put someone down. And I don't want us to be in that situation.
I'll do that.
Like, Bayless
is like, look, it is better that one person go down and the rest of us get away. I'm okay with that. And besides, you don't have to say you're the Uhuru. You're just pirates.
Bayless, after this, I want to emphasize to you that you are doing hard work here. And once we're done with this, don't put yourself in the pressure of seeking a leadership position. Post this, I really feel like you should find yourself work where you can put your heels up and not have to worry about being responsible for the safety of others.
Okay, courier. I could do that.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I love that.
Okay, well, I mean, it feels like I don't want to bring in so many more extra people that then also calls attention just trying to get in the room.
Maybe two more, the four of
us?
Yeah. Just enough for you and me to be able to do it and people to watch our backs.
I know that when we were trying to get towards the factory, there was outfitting that we had when handling the offset of handling Grisova. I assume that there's some kind of uniform that folks have when going to harvest it.
Oh, I mean, you saw it because you saw harvesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, you know, it is head to toe.
Yeah.
Easy enough to conceal.
Well, I guess we got everything we need.
Oh, let's do it.
Because we always appreciate a Jane and no does. Y'all want to come with?
Yes. I believe this is the best move. I'd be happy to make sure this is a success.
All right. And Bayless, it kind of seems like you're pretty down. Can you open the door for us?
Oh, yeah,
can you get us in?
Yeah.
Yar.
All right. Bayless, I'm going to ask you, you feeling hopeful right now?
Yeah.
You feeling like we're going to succeed? I would like you to restore a hit point for yourself.
I need my sheet. Yeah. Sky Jacks.
So we join the Captain's Council of the Skyship Uhuru and Spit atop a mountain somewhere in the world of Sphere. Below them, rocky outcroppings stretch out with trees swaying back and forth in the wind as they watch the sun roll over a beautiful landscape.
Well, I want to thank everybody for inviting me to the Captain's Council retreat. I feel honored.
You're only here to do the minutes. So.
I totally understand. I am a little bit curious as to why we need minutes for a retreat, but I'm happy.
We need record of how we retreated and how we relaxed.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's kind of important that we need to, occasionally there'll be a bit of a philosophical musing as we see like a babbling brook or watch the sunrise come over the leaves or just feel the wind upon our skin. And those things kind of need to be noted down for future prosperity. You know what I mean?
Spit, read back the minutes.
Spit takes out the scroll of paper that he was working with and searches back for what he has most recently written down.
Spit, why are you saying what you're doing?
Hang on. I'm about to read the minutes. You either want me to read the minutes or you don't want me to read
the minutes. Your voice is different.
It's fine. Please go ahead. Read the minutes.
My voice has never been different.
Medically, this is what it is. I have gone to countless speech therapists, doctors, surgeons. I have tried to do my own vocal cord surgery. Nothing stops this. Yeah, this is the one setting that I get.
The surgery reversed itself overnight. Oh God! I think that right. Makes...
In his fervor, Spit drops the paper on the ground.
Whoa! Whoa.
Bending down to pick it up, a
Spit,
series
stop what
of
you're doing.
Popping
stop,
sounds.
Spit, stop right now.
Explode across the mountaintop.
Whoa.
His joints strain under the pressure.
Spit, I'm going to need you to stop moving right now.
What's going on?
Everyone
what's going
stop.
On?
Hold on. Please, give us a second as we just kind of listen. I think there's an intruder or something. Hold up, let's listen.
Everyone, hands on your weapons.
The breeze rolls by.
Yeah! Swiping in the air!
Just throwing magic everywhere.
Jonnet, normally a confident and practiced martial artist.
It's got its eyes set on me.
It flails wildly about.
Gable!
Get behind me.
Gable!
It's fine. We've handled existential threats from beyond before. When is
Jonnet
like
jumps
kind
into
of angel
Gable's
attack?
Arms like a toddler.
I wasn't going to, but I'm being lifted up and into your arms!
No, get off me! Get off me!
Normally
off
I would do this
me.
Instinctually, but I didn't. That was not me, Gable!
Clearly some kind of powerful luminary at work here. It's fine. All we just need to do is make sure we need to work out what we need to do to appease it. So, apparently they want you to be interacting with each other in a very comedic, elaborate fashion. So, I don't know, Gable, what can we do to appease that?
I don't know about that, Captain. I feel like it feeds on the principles of yes and. And then...
as Gable contemplates what should be done, they pull out a banana and begin to peel it. Taking one big bite of it, they discard the peel nearby.
While carrying Jonnet.
Stop. I don't want this banana.
I'm opening my eye. I'm trying to see what the universe... Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The universe is blank. I see nothing.
Oh, God. Oh, no. It's making me eat the banana sexy like.
Gable eats the banana in a way they think is sexy.
Take
this
it out of your
This is not information
nose.
We really spit. What have you drawn into this world?
Now why is this my fault?
This is your doing. All right. I have always looked up to you, but I will cut you down right now, Spit.
Yeah, hold on. Everybody spends a lot of time heaping criticism on Spit, being like, "Oh no, Spit! How could you do such a thing? Oh no, Spit! How could you say such a thing?" Well, now y'all are gonna depend on me because I know how to defeat this creature.
What is it?
The only way to stop someone narrating from what you're doing is to do something so obscene that no one would ever dare narrate it.
Jonnet cuts off his afro. One fell swoop, Kasarigama. Sheep.
The hair falls to the ground.
No!
Softly landing with a sweet, almost marshmallowy texture.
Gable starts reciting the first chapter of The Hunger Games in its entirety.
Wait a minute, I hear a new voice now!
No, we can't do this. Okay. If it has to be obscene, it's fine. I'm going to stop removing my shirt. It's entirely all right. We'll be able to handle this.
I think this is the thing it wants the most. I think this is the thing that this voice wants the very most.
Obviously, we've got the bone shaping on hand, and I have a feeling that some of the things I can contort my insides into so ridiculously obscene that I don't think it could be perceived by mortal men. Sorry, yes. It takes a...
I believe in this.
I am singing Katy Perry songs. You're gonna hear me roar louder than a lion.
Is the McDonald's value menu a four piece for $2? A McDouble for $4.50?
We fade out on the group of heroes.
No, no, no. Oh my god, everything's going dark.
Okay, finally, go for obscenity.
Captain,
and
hold my
copyright
hand.
Infringement.
I'm not ready to vanish again.
Oh, God. I can feel myself.
Oh, no, we can never deny the call of the day.
Perfect. Perfect. Good. Campaign Skyjacks is a one-shot network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT, or streaming at twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him over on Twitter at Arnie Parrott or on his website, ATP Tunes. This episode was edited by Ali Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at DreamsToBecome or on her podcast, Skyjack's Courier's Call. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Lunarum. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show was made in part by using a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals. There are no kings. Take flight.
Strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise, twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.